Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Gary Yeti Bullock, 15 years of combination experience, second generation firefighter, captain on Engine 31 with Tulsa Fire Department in Oklahoma, Build Your Culture cadre member, smoke diver graduate from Georgia and Oklahoma. At first glance, Gary looks intimidating. 6'6", weighing in at 260 could have that effect on a man. Being quiet and keeping to himself, make no doubt about it, Gary's all in when it comes to the profession. What allured him in was the team aspect and being intentional when it comes to purpose. The goal was always Tulsa Fire Department, but the road leading there made Gary realize the areas he needed to improve on. Gary spoke the truth when it comes to the job, and I'm sure most of you will agree upon listening. My favorite quote from him was, "Sometimes it's not your ambition, but what's best for the department." With that, I present Gary Yeti Bullock.
I'm Gary Bullock, work in Tulsa Fire Department, captain with the fire department here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I've been in the fire service for about 15 years. I've worked in EMS as well. Currently live in Collinsville, Oklahoma. I was born in St. Louis, Missouri, lived in Texas as well as Florida, all over the place, gone through some different challenges throughout life and different hurdles. Different things growing up for the most part. But overall, what led me into the fire service was a lot of different things. I played some basketball in high school, had an opportunity to play a little bit of college basketball. And in that, you know, it sounds pretty cliche. I've heard a lot of different interview type things, but ultimately just that team aspect of things really is what drove me to want to be there and help individuals. I'm a very purpose-driven individual. And so, which is kind of like, it's been a lot of different things in life. You know, I've done handyman services. I've done a lot of different stuff. I've worked a lot of different jobs, but everything always came back to the fire service. Technically, I am a second generation firefighter. I had a grandpa on my mom's side that was a battalion chief, retired after about 43 years in the fire service. And he worked at St. Louis Fire Department. Unfortunately, being younger and when he retired, I never had one single conversation with him about his experiences or his career. It's pretty unique, but it was always in the back of my mind as a young kid. It was always a goal, definitely went different directions throughout life. Went to technical school for aviation maintenance, decided that wasn't for me, and worked a lot of different jobs, hydraulic shop type stuff, just different things. But ultimately I ended up having a conversation with a chief in Owosso, Oklahoma, and he was like, get all that EMS stuff. And so my focus became becoming an EMT and going to college. And so I started taking a lot of fire classes and stuff because I felt like that's what I needed to do to be successful to get hired. Looking back, I wish I would have just gone straight into trying to get hired and then get the classes, but it all worked out. I was had the opportunity to be a volunteer while working as an EMT, had a pretty busy ambulance service in Tulsa called IMSA. Started volunteering at Berry Hill Fire Department or Fire Protection District in West Tulsa. But anyway, so I had an opportunity to volunteer. My partner and I went over there and started volunteering. And after about a year of doing that, I realized, man, this is exactly what I want to do. Started getting a little focused on the EMS side of things and really enjoyed, the drive and passion of being able to help individuals on medical calls, but then really saw the other side of things of the fire side where you can kind of do that as well as challenge yourself in a lot of other aspects. Had the opportunity to be a daytime firefighter at this small department. At the time, it was four individuals that were paid. The rest were volunteer, had about 20 to 30. It just depended. It was a revolving door all the time. Ended up, after a couple of months, getting assigned a shift. A lot of members at that department were hired at Tulsa and other surrounding departments around us. So went through the Tulsa fire process for about 5 years. And so during that time, I worked at Berry Hill. And so gained a lot of experiences. Being a smaller department, the budget was different. They had a lot of budget for training. And obviously, we weren't paid very well. But honestly, it was a blessing to be able to not have a lot of responsibility and still go to training and get paid to do it and have fun. So, but it opened up a lot of different opportunities. I was able to go to FDIC, take a few classes, and, get my roots kind of established in some of the truck company operations, because that chief that I had at the time was pushing for that to supplement some of the smaller departments around us to help out, because most of the people in our world just throw engines at all their problems. And so he was wanting to try to influence and throw, hey, here's a truck or a ladder company. We can help you with your writ or ventilation needs. And so it was kind of way out there. Definitely was voodoo in our world, but we were all for it because we just enjoyed training. And so smaller department, like I said, didn't run a lot of calls, but a lot of people were coming through the door constantly that were asking and wanting to learn. And so I think that's what really established my roots in the drive for wanting to continue to learn throughout my career, as well as help others be successful. And so, finally became a member for the Tulsa Fire Department in 2015. My goal then was to, because I had been a captain at that point for about 4 years at the smaller department, and so was to be the best Tulsa firefighter when I got hired there. And so tried to relearn everything, obviously way more aggressive of a style department. They have a lot more manpower to throw it into different fires and stuff. We always kind of joke that, we don't really put the fires out. We just stomp it out. We put enough people in the house to put it out. I've got some different numbers, but Tulsa's 30 station department has 30 engine staff during the day. Some of them are four man, some are three man. The outlying stations are four man, just for manpower numbers to meet ISO needs. And then we have 14 ladder companies, which is quite a bit for most cities, compared to like Oklahoma City only has like 11 or 12, and they have 38 stations. But our district chiefs, we have five districts, and they all run with a safety officer assigned to them, which is a captain. So it's an extra captain for each district. So staffing during the day, most shifts, I think, is about 150. We have about 730 members on the department. Currently assigned to Station 31, which is a slower station. I've worked a lot of my initial career was a Station 20, pretty busy, 15 to 20 calls a shift, and Station 10 up north, a lot of fire load, a lot of fire type calls, about 15 calls. Station 22, about the same. I was assigned to the ladder, and that's what kind of really switched some of my focus in my career, being assigned to a ladder and then promoted to captain, and now currently assigned to Station 31. So, but overall, kind of in a nutshell, I've been involved in a lot of different training and opportunities for different programs. I've worked for OSU FST, currently a Georgia smoke diver, as well as an Oklahoma smoke diver, kind of helped behind the scenes on getting our Oklahoma program up and running. There's a lot of other individuals that have done way more legwork than I have. I've been fortunate enough to help and teach at Wichita Hot for the Georgia smoke diver class, as well as FDIC the last 2 years for the Georgia smoke diver class. Currently a member for the Mid-America Tulsa Fools. I'm trying to get that, trying to help where I can with that program. It's been reestablished the last few years to from an old Fools program. The Oklahoma City one is pretty heavily involved, and so we're just trying to bring some more stuff to Northeast Oklahoma and help several other departments around our area with their academies and different things that I've taken on as being kind of a specialty, throwing ladders or walking on roofs or different ventilation things or search techniques. And so I have a lot of different friends and networking colleagues that I've tried to help where I can, and just shed some light on some of these different things and bring them to our world over in Northeast Oklahoma. Kind of a lot, but it's been a busy 15 years, that's for sure. I've had a lot of support. I kind of left this one off, but I am married and have a family of five, three children, and I wouldn't be where I am if it wasn't for my wife. That's been basically, we've been together / married for 14 years. And so almost the entire career, she's been there right with me and supportive. And so three kiddos, 18-year-old getting ready to go to college, 16-year-old getting ready to go be a junior, and almost 9-year-old that's running the show. So everything revolves around her, it seems like lately, just because basketball and soccer and sports and just running around with her head cut off. So,
all right. I'm going to kind of go back a little bit. You mentioned when you were at, I think you said Berry Hill, correct?
Yes.
You then thought to yourself, all right, I'm going to apply at Tulsa. If I am correct, did you say it took you 5 years to get on?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it took 5 years. So there's no real good reason other than, you know, I had some challenges as a younger kid growing up and made some mistakes and, you know, throughout those hiring processes. I know, you know, I was fired from a couple of jobs when I was younger. Those interviews and different, you know, processes are there for a reason. And I know, and I've matured and stuff like that, all that kind of good things. And looking back, you know, I just wasn't being honest at times with myself or the situations I was in, and probably made excuses in those interviews. And so that held me back a little bit as well. And so, you know, each time that I was unsuccessful, I'd always schedule a meeting with the fire chief and be like, hey, you know, I made it to here. What can I do to get past this point? Or what can I do to get past that point? And so each little time I met with them, I went through, I guess, two different fire chiefs, three different recruitment officers. But yeah, multiple different processes. But, you know, I learned a little bit here and there and kind of honed in. I've never been a very good speaker overall, pretty quiet individual. I've been referenced as being stoic. And so, which is kind of why I have the nickname I have, Yeti. A previous captain of mine called me cold as ice, and I don't show a lot of emotions. So I guess it's fitting. It's all fun and games. You know, everyone, fire service, they always poke and make fun. But yeah, it took 5 years. And so I was fortunate enough to work at that smaller department and gain as much experience as I could, as well as go have a lot of different training opportunities and help that community while I was there. But my overall goal was to get hired at Tulsa. And so I just kept pushing and kept showing up for all the different mock interviews, the practice training or practice PATs, and the meeting with the fire chief. And the last time that I decided to do was instead of meeting after the interview process where I was unsuccessful or not selected, I decided to meet the fire chief or have a meeting with him a couple months before my chief's interview, and basically just throw it out there like, hey, here's everything I've done. You know me pretty well at this point. What would you like to see from this point to when I see you for that final interview again? What would you like to see me do different? And one of the things he threw out there was that, you know, I had a couple of low grades on a couple of college classes. And so he would like to see me take some more college classes to try to complete my degree. Well, with only about a month left or so, that's was pretty tough. But I ended up taking a class, a computer concepts class, took it and completed it in about 14 days just so I could have something to show that, hey, this is what I want. You gave me some recommendations and I owned it and this is what I did. And so I was actually selected as an alternate for that academy. At the time, we had quite a bit of members that would get offers and then they would go to another department if they're paramedics or whatever. Mm-hmm. A couple of our suburb departments hire a lot of paramedics and they pay a little bit more because mm-hmm. they're running ambulances, and we don't run ambulances at Tulsa. And so that's kind of been a challenge for the department. But thankfully for me, I was, you know, number 8 alternate and ended up getting in the academy. And so they had added 5 additional members for that academy. And then they went through all their alternates as well and ended up having to bring someone in 2 weeks after the academy started just because someone had dropped out. And so that's a lot of talk around this. That was, you know, 10 years ago. But, you know, to this day, I still just thought, just like the FDIC keynote speech was about, you know, recruitment and retention. And I think that's just it's a huge battle that the fire service has been having for the last, you know, 10 plus years. It's just
right.
Other departments offering more money, cities having challenges. You know, I even listened to your podcast the other day with a guy from Detroit talking about all their challenges. I mean, it's everywhere. Every city's kind of dealing with it in different ways. And so, but yeah, that's kind of why it took so long is some of my own fault, definitely ownership in there. And then I think it was just timing. And so obviously things happen for a reason. And I finally got hired when I did, and it's been a blessing.
But the thing to me is the key factor for me is that you owned it. Like, no one's perfect. Everyone's going to mess up. You asked the chief, hey, what can I do to improve? Which shows that you have that drive to improve yourself. So kudos to you for sure. But my question is, was that transition hard going from captain knowing, shit, I got to go back to a firefighter?
No, I mean, honestly, and I left this out of my bio when I sent it to you, but you know, my first interview to be paid at this smaller department was at a McDonald's. And so, you know, a couple of board members, hey, meet me over here and we'll talk about stuff, you know, and they're like, we know you don't have a lot of experience, but we know you have a lot of this EMS experience. And that's pretty much most of our runs. And they're like, we're going to go ahead and throw you this red helmet and you're going to be assigned a shift. And so I had no idea what I was doing, no training formally. And so I say all that to say that, like, you know, even though I had a red helmet, I was responsible for, you know, 15 or 12 volunteers that were assigned to my shift. You know, being in charge and making decisions and stuff like that wasn't really a big deal. For me personally, I always enjoyed striving to try to learn and help improve situations and outcomes. And so I was the kid that always would take a radio apart and put it back together to see if it worked, you know. And so I was trying to solve problems and fix things. My wife hates it, but it's the truth. You know, husbands are always trying to solve the wife's problems. But no, whenever I was hired, you know, I had a lot of people say like, oh, that's going to be real hard. And for me, I just flipped the switch. And that's probably something that I'm pretty good at. You know, and I'm not a big horn tutor, but, you know, I've been successful in a couple of difficult programs throughout the years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just being able to flick a switch and just do the job that's expected of you and just doing it. And so you call it resilience and ambition and stuff like that, whatever. I'm not good with all the wording, but overall, you know, I knew that this is what I wanted to do. And so, you know, I had achieved and gained a lot of experience with that department, and that they treated me well. But I had an opportunity to go over here and be a Tulsa firefighter. So my goal was to be the best Tulsa firefighter I could be. I definitely caught flack in the academy, especially when people learned and found out that, oh, you're a captain, or maybe you know, at times you were helping run the department, and, you know, I got the label chief and all that stuff. And even when I got out on company, guys put red stickers all over the helmet, you know, trying to make my helmet red. And it's all fun and games. And looking back, that's just what we do in the fire service. We like to poke each other and stir the pot. And so, but yeah, I mean, it definitely had some challenges, but overall it was the goal that I wanted. And so an opportunity to go in there and learn some more about the fire service and be successful.
Okay. All right. So my next question to you is, upon completion of your academy, you get your first assignment. With you wanting to be a Tulsa firefighter, when you got to that station, did you immediately try to go find those individuals you wanted to emulate?
Yeah. So our culture is, you know, typically show up the shift before, you know, drop all your stuff off. And, you know, obviously seek out the different mentors. We don't have a very strong mentor program within Tulsa. And that's something that I know that our fire chief has been working on the last couple of years with. He had Scott Thompson and them come up and deliver some functional fire company classes. And it's definitely something. I mean, we've had some, what's the term? You know, non-official, I guess, mentors and different people to lead. And there's definitely been a lot of individuals that have just sharing information because that's what was shared with them. And so, but overall, you know, you get there. I had a lot of friends that had been hired from Berry Hill on the department that gave me a lot of good advice and helped me be successful. And I think that ultimately is what helped me go in the right direction. I definitely made some mistakes. I remember my experience at the ambulance service, 2 years running, you know, 2,500 calls a year around the city of Tulsa. I knew the streets and addresses. And I remember one time we were going to an address and my driver, which at the time we called them drivers, fire equipment operators, which now we call them lieutenants. And our rank structure, the drivers ride up as captains. If the captain's gone, the chief's mm-hmm. gone, captains ride up as chiefs. And so, but I remember we were going to a medical and, you know, they're like, hey, we're going to go up here and make a left. And I'm thinking like, it's to the right. And so I put my foot in my mouth and kind of spoke up. But thankfully that driver lieutenant pulled me aside and just he obviously laid into me a little bit. But he also was like, hey, like, you know, I understand. I appreciate it. I'm new, but you got to be real careful. And so Tulsa overall is a very traditional department. And, you know, everything I always heard was like, hey, when you get out there, your cap, just stay in your captain's right pocket and mm-hmm. don't do anything unless they tell you to. And so it's another driving force of why I wanted to promote, because there's definitely opportunity in times that that has to happen, but there's also a lot of times where the firefighters just need to know how to do their job and be expected to do it without being told what to do. And so those are some of the conversations I've had recently with guys that it's kind of been eye-opening because a lot of them haven't experienced it, you know, just because a lot of times you pull on scene and they're like, what hose line you would pull? And really that conversation should never happen when you're arriving on scene. They should be able to estimate the stretch, know what kind of fire they have based on what they see, and pull the line they think they should pull. And that's my expectation. And I'm like, man, if you pull the wrong line, then that's fine. Like, we'll adapt, we'll overcome, we'll talk about it, we'll train on it, we'll build from it and get better. But ultimately, my goal is that, like, you see the smoke as a certain way and you make a decision, or maybe you see something I don't see and you tell me. And so I'm huge on everyone helping be successful. Like, I want to be on the truck where I'm not the smartest guy just because I have a red helmet. You know, I want to be surrounded by people that know more or have different trades or different backgrounds and experiences. And hopefully that'll all let us be successful to go home. You know, I've over the years caught some flack here and there, like, oh, all he likes to do is train or this or that, or he's always gone. And, but you know, my wife, she's been very supportive, and I've always told her, and the same thing I tell them. I was like, man, these are the things I feel like I need to do to be successful. And so everyone's opinion of being successful is different. And for me, being engaged in the fire service, constantly working on becoming better, striving to improve, is going to help me be the best firefighter I can be, hopefully to help someone else be successful as well, but also allow me to go home to my family. And so, in the words of Captain Phippen, a Tulsa firefighter, used to call him hard hitting Phippen, but he always says, you know, he doesn't answer to you, he answers to your family. And so I've taken that to heart. So anytime that I'm pushing for a little bit extra here and there, or hey, let's stop over here and look at this place, or, you know, we just drove by a place yesterday that all three of us in the truck didn't even realize was there, and we decided to stop and take a look. And it was just a storage facility that had RVs, but it looked like an RV park that just popped up. And so there was some different restriction type things, but ultimately by taking the time, extra 15, 20 minutes to stop and look, that's hopefully going to allow us to be successful if something bad were to happen. And all those little things I think contribute to hopefully helping us all be successful to go home. And like I said, because I don't answer to you or the firefighter on the back, I answer to your family. And so, Captain Phippen, that's driven home pretty hard in my mind ever since he told me that one time. So,
and I feel like a number of individuals who want the rank of captain, lieutenant, who want to be the boss, tend to forget that. Like, at the end of the day, if you make a bad call, or God forbid your firefighter were to get hurt or killed, you have to be there to see the family. You know what I mean? Like, and I think some of them don't quite understand that. They just see the title, the pay raise, the rank, and they don't put in the factor of, besides sitting in that right front seat, you have a lot of responsibility behind you, you know? And like, so when it comes to making sure they're trained, they're smart enough to know what lines to pull, you're not having a micromanage, because no fireman loves a micromanager. I know I don't. But in order to get that firefighter to that point where they don't have to be micromanaged, the captain, the lieutenant, the officer in charge has to set that tone. And I love that you spoke about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like you said, I've definitely worked for some different micromanagers over the years and different jobs and different places. And it's got its place at times too. I mean, I think, you know, sometimes there's safety situations, people call it micromanager or not, but ultimately, like you said, I think, you know, everyone understanding, knowing, and being ready to do the job, having those conversations before the drop hits. Mm-hmm. You know, that's been a huge thing that I've tried to mold and modify. You know, change is a bad word in the fire service. I took an incident safety officer class where the guy said, use modify, don't say change, you know, and it seems to be taking a little better. But you know, pulling up my previous district chief, or I guess current one, he was big on pulling up different videos at lunchtime and dinner. And hey, what do you see here? What do you see here? You know, and just so everyone can kind of get an idea of what they're seeing, it's a good opportunity for the firefighters to share different things they may see or different, or maybe how they're actually seeing it, and that's a huge thing. And so, just because they see black smoke, everyone thinks heavy, heavy, thick fire, but sometimes it's not always that. It could be just smoldering smoke, just putting off more, hydrocarbons and stuff. But that's a huge area. It's a whole nother avenue to go down that I've, overall that I think that's my next challenge is to really try to push and drive home the building construction learning as well as art of reading smoke type stuff. And I think those are the two factors that really get a lot of us in jeopardy or in getting ourselves in a lot of trouble because we don't pay attention to it. I'm not saying you have to do a 360 and stuff like that, but just understanding some of those fundamentals is huge. And we've heard about it for years. A lot of people are coming on, they're coming straight out of college or coming straight from I've had a couple of firefighters recently that still live at home with their parents and they don't have any kind of, blue collar background, which is fine. They bring some different challenge. And one of the best firefighters that I've ever been around and trained, to this day, he still lives at home with his parents, plays video games, but you tell him to jump and he just jumps. You don't ask how high. But he's smart with it, and he's soaking it all up. He's always paying attention. And, one of the most aggressive firefighters that I've been around. And, but overall, yeah. So like the culture of the job as a whole, every part of the United States is different. But for us, trying to build up some of our knowledge base on building construction as well as reading smoke and understanding, I think will help us be more successful.
Okay. All right. Speaking of, I did forget to ask this question regarding Tulsa, because I always like to ask the guests, what is on a residential structure fire, what's Tulsa's first alarm assignment?
So we call them our Class C assignments, our like a residential type fire. So it's going to get four engines and a ladder. And those engines are staffed with three minimum. If it's an outlying company, they're going to have four. The ladders have three. You're going to get a district chief as well as that captain on their rig. That's going to be a safety officer. Sometimes our EMS supervisor will show up. There's a lot of, as a whole, the department is very coiled spring type aggressive. I mean, they are all wanting to help and be involved. And so you'll usually get two or three companies that'll jump it. Our AVL has been down, so dispatch has been doing what they could, but it's back up. And so depending on that, sometimes you'll get different companies and stuff. But any kind of commercial building, school, anything bigger than a house, unless it's just a really big house, you'll get five engines and two ladders and then two district chiefs. And so every fire, they send a couple of ambulances as well, standby. That's run by a private company, or it's kind of a what's the word? They are they're a trust. The IMSA. I mean, a lot of people around the country know IMSA, but there it's a trust between Oklahoma City and Tulsa. It's like a city
Okay.
charter thing. So that's the ambulance service. But yeah. So those are the anywhere from I guess 15 to 20 members will show up pretty quick within about 3 to 4 minutes. So.
Okay. All right. And in your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
So I've done some research on this, but it's just like I said, words are hard for me. But honestly, I think just to kind of shed some light on the term overall in the fire service, I think overall it has been kind of tamed as or labeled as a bad thing, aggressive. And so that's I start off with that because aggressive is not reckless, and reckless is a bad thing. And so in my mind, aggressive is someone that is confident in their abilities and their skills. They've practiced, they've trained, they've had the conversations with their crew. They get off the truck, they don't talk, they're just going to work. And so those are the ones that are moving fast. They're hustling, they're even running. They're getting off the rig with tools and they know how to use them. They're bringing the right tools. They're not bringing 5 foot New York hooks into search. They have a tick ready, and so they've already done their size up, and so they're moving with a purpose, and they're being confident with their movements, and that looks aggressive, and that is aggressive, and it should be. But reckless are the ones where, you're freelancing, you're doing things that you're not supposed to do, you're just willy-nilly jumping off into different things and trying to look cool, and I think those are the things that get people hurt and injured and killed, and But overall, you know, aggressive, I would say a smart firefighter that's confident in their abilities is an aggressive firefighter, because they're going to go in and they're going to do the job that's expected of them, and they're going to do it efficiently and as quickly as possible.
Okay. All right. I love the research. Sounds great. At what point, with you having prior experience, though, so at what point or what year did you decide to start moving up the ranks in Tulsa?
So our promotional process is all, you know, once you reach a certain year, you can take a test. And so it's all test-based. It's not merit-based. I mean, it is merit-based, but it's not like based on seniority. Seniority factors into it a little bit. It definitely helps. And so once you have 3 years on as a firefighter, you're eligible to take a lieutenant's test. And so, which is kind of young, they're kind of working on changing some of that right now, and bumping it back a little bit. Because statistically, there's really only like one to maybe three firefighters that have 3 years on right on the mark and they're actually successful and make the list. But culturally, it doesn't always happen. It's usually the 5 to 7 year range when people actually promote to that rank. And so, but once I had 3 years on, I guess it was around 3.5, almost 4, when I was eligible, but there wasn't a test. And so I took one just to get some experience, check it out, you know, and obviously I had the passion of wanting to serve others and help other members with, you know, within the same ranks as well as, you know, below to be more successful. And that's been my driving force on trying to promote, you know, servant leadership and, be there to make it all about them. And you know, obviously when the tones drop and it's time to put that hat on and go to work, but ultimately the station life, it's about all of us, not just what I want or whoever's in charge. And so, so I promoted to lieutenant at the time. They changed it from fire equipment operator to lieutenant, just to kind of meet some of the national lingo, because our lieutenants right out as captains right out as chiefs. And so, and our chiefs right out, district chiefs right out as assistant chiefs, which are our shift chiefs. And so, but each opportunity I ever had to take a test, I took it. It was, like I said before, to be in a position to help others and serve others. That's what I'm all about. And personally, I, you know, every day we're like, hey, what do you guys want to eat? What do you guys want to do? I try to make it all about everyone else, you know, grab the mop and try to mop it before them, just to let them focus on different things that they need to do, you know, help out the guy, check out the truck, or, you know, some of the guys that I've worked with recently over the years, you know, they'll have different goals on different things they want to do. One might be training for this, or one might be doing this. And so, or even if they're studying, because that's a goal they have, you know, we're going to pick up, you know, the different things that they're missing out on because they're trying to focus on that and help them out, you know. And it's just, that's how it should be. Everyone should be helping out. And I've worked for different bosses over the years, different places where, you know, you're in there mopping and they're already working out, you know, and that's just, that's not cool. You know, we got to do what's best for them and, you know, help our guys out below, just make it better, you know. And kind of ran into a, it's a little off topic subject, but ran into a situation recently where, you know, had an opportunity to give back to our guys. We didn't spend as much money as we might have, you know, on groceries and had a chance to kind of like give some money back to the guys that are firefighters. Cause I know that one of them that had traveled over, you know, he's running his budget on his computer every shift, it seems like. So guys are going through tough times and, mm-hmm. You know, I heard a little thing one time, you know, most of us, we get so caught up in our own little bubble that we don't really pay attention to everything around us. And I really try to be observant of everything. So, you know, it was a good opportunity to give back, and it's something that does not happen normally. You know, it'll pat the kitty and help us buy steaks one day, you know, but for me, I would rather just that guy be happy and enjoy the shift and not be stressed out. So I've got a lot of rabbit trails and ADD, so I'm all over the place usually, but
all right.
So, but all of it factors into why I wanted to promote, and you know, hopefully I don't really have any ambition to become a chief. I know that question might come up at some point, but as much as some people say that needs to happen, not for me, but people need to promote to those ranks or someone else's that we don't want. And so you know, if that road comes down, if that bridge crosses down the road or whatever it is, then maybe. But I just enjoy the truck and being there for the guys and girls. So
Okay. So you went from firefighter to FEO slash lieutenant, and then you
yep.
made the move from there to
To
captain.
captain. Yes, sir.
And I just want people to hear your reasoning to promote to captain was.
Just to, I want to be there for the members and help them out, serve them. You know, it's never been, honestly, like there was about a $10,000 bump in each rank. But for me, you know, money does help, but it's never been a driving force. And I've heard that a lot, like a lot of guys, like, oh, you know, need to start studying and get that, you know, get that pay bump and this. And I'm like, man, there's more to it than that. And I actually heard recently, which is the non-glamorous side of promotion, but, you know, a lot of guys forget that when you promote ultimately as a supervisor, and I actually heard this at FDIC this year with Gordon Graham was talking about it, that you know the supervisor is there to enforce policies, to make sure everyone is doing the job they're supposed to do and is expected of them. And that's the unglamorous side of things. And so that definitely was kind of like a little bit of like a reset in my mind. Yeah, just promoted, and we always kind of call like our lieutenants and drivers like the cool uncle. They're in charge, but not really in charge. And that was a lot of fun. But now, obviously, you know, promoted to captain, I have a company, and you know, it's all on my shoulders. And so ultimately, you know, if we bust that red light, or if we're speeding, or if we don't handle our truck checks, or don't do things we're supposed to, that comes back on me. And ultimately, obviously, it'll come back on whoever didn't do their job as well. But you know, doing the simple things allows us to be successful. And so just having a little bit of accountability and, you know, trying to lead from the front, lead as an example, has been my big driving, you know, behind everything that I do. I try to set the standard, try to, you know, be the first one, hey, you want to work out, you know, or hey, let's do this or that. And now, as much as, you know, a lot of people that are probably listening will be like, oh, you know, all he wants to do is train. And a lot of times for me, I don't even bring up training. It's other people know, they know that I'm willing to train, and so they'll bring it up and I'll be like, let's do it, because I have 24 hours. And so we can do anything all day long. I don't care if I get sleep or not. I got 2 days off to sleep. And so but yeah, ultimately, I mean, I promoted for the members and be there for the individuals that are doing the hard work and putting it in. And I'm just there to help everyone be successful so we can all go home safe, and solve all these problems that unfortunately people call us for. So
Isn't it crazy to think that you have firefighters out there that say that exact statement that you said? All he or she wants to do is train. And like, I think about that. It's like, you think about what we do, what we are paid for when the citizens call 911, and you have individuals who are griping about you wanting to better yourself at the job.
yeah, I think it's, you know, and you see it around more and more. Obviously, social media has changed the game overall. I mean, I think for the better. You know, overall, I would imagine that culturally, you know, at any department, any aspect of any service where someone's going above and beyond, no one wants to look bad. And I think ultimately, individuals that aren't as confident or don't feel as adequate in certain areas and stuff, they may struggle with the aspect of training in front of other individuals or different things like that. You know, definitely the mentality is, you know, we've always done it this way, why change it? I've been met with that a lot, especially with pushing for the ladder culture, because traditionally ladders were where we put all our guys that were getting ready to retire, or members that we didn't want and stuff like that. And you know, you go anywhere else in the country, and you know, they're the ones, that's where all the pipe hitters are at, all the guys that you expect to do the job and you know, it needs to be done. And honestly, like a lot of our members that are there, they've got the experience and tenure, and they were solid individuals that did a lot for the department. And you know, they're just trying to slow down a little bit because our engines are ALS for the most part, and so they're running tons and tons of medicals. And so you know, but overall, you know, like I said, the training stuff, I think A lot of people get worried about looking bad in front of other individuals. And that's something I've really, for me, I don't care if I look bad in front of someone. I hope that I'm unsuccessful at times. Just for one, it gives me something to kind of build and work towards. But also others should know it's okay to be unsuccessful. That's why you train. You know, I actually share this with my daughter often. She thinks that she can go to her skills lesson and just be the best basketball player in the world. And I'm like, hey, what you do at skills will show you some different things to learn and work on. So when you're on your own and you're shooting those free throws and working on those layups, that's how you get better as an individual. Skills is where you go learn some stuff. Practice is where you go practice with your teammates to be a good team. And the game is where you get to go show it off. And so, but trying to teach that to an 8-year-old that's very stubborn, that doesn't think anything I say, or I don't know how to play basketball at all. You know, it's how it always is. But she sees it sometimes, you know, especially, and I think we all admit to some things here and there. I'm not perfect, and you know, I'm confident in my abilities, and I know that I'm putting in the time to learn the skills. I just hope that when the day comes, I can do the job I'm expected to do and help someone. So, but yeah, the training stuff, it's crazy because. Another little example that I like to use is, everyone loves sports. I just referenced my daughter basketball, but professional sports. How many hours are they putting in the gym?
Thank you.
Working out, training, working out, going over these plays, watching these videos, this, all this for one game. One game they know that's scheduled on Sunday. Now Thursdays, Friday, whatever Saturdays, but. Basketball is obviously a little different, it's a little bit more, but I compared it to football, those are the things that I look at. I'm like, we've all sat there and watched someone else's fire and armchair quarterbacked it. We've all sat there and complained at the TV, this guy dropped a pass, but when someone's watching our video, are we going to do the job expected of us? I mean, did we put in our time, watch those videos, get those reps, estimating the stretch, pulling the hose lines, throwing the ladders, and unfortunately that's what's come back on my shoulder now as, being a captain, it's going to be up to me that my crew is going to be proficient and, not the training centers. It's not the training center's job. Their job is to train, academies and help us with some company drills and challenge us as individuals at those individual companies. It's on us to be squared away to do the job we're expected to do. So.
Preaching. Love it. Freaking love it. All right. With that being said, I want to know if you can give a little insight. How did you go about, I don't want to use the word change, we're going to use the word modify or whatever. What was that word you used that you mentioned that,
modify.
That instructor? Okay. Modify.
Yeah. Modify.
Bring in.
Yeah. Cause honestly, like, sorry, you're going to go ahead.
No, I was going to say, how did you go about, modifying that ladder search culture, because that is an area where departments seem to struggle, but with all the data, all the research, all the facts and the videos being shown now, I think departments are trending towards that way. So what did you do for Tulsa?
Well, like I said, beginning, we have a lot of other members that have been pushing for different things over the years. Different captains that have promoted that were younger, they were put on a ladder, like I said, historically, it was always for like the slow down guys type stuff, or maybe someone's trying to extend their career or they've had an injury. But with the younger generation coming through, there's been a lot of driving force. And, one of the first ones, he was pushing for it pretty hard, doing a lot of different things and a lot of good stuff, but it was only in his little bubble. And really all we can really affect is our circle. And you hope that it spreads out from there. And so he was doing a lot of good stuff over there. And I remember hearing a lot of different things. And so whenever I had the opportunity to go work at Ladder 2-2, that was about 5 years ago or 4.5 years ago or so. Chief Lloyd was actually my district chief at the time. And he asked me to take that spot. And I said, if you put me on a ladder, I'm going to do truck stuff. And he was like, I'm all for it. And so the biggest thing is having support of that district chief, because I've definitely worked for different company officers, different people. Like I said before, when they don't support what you're going on, it's tough. And so and then just having some conversations here and there and talking about different things. And I think with a lot of different social media stuff going on, a lot of different things around town, we've been faced with a couple of big fires that really were kind of some reality checks for us as a department. It all shed light on different things that were, I mean, we were kind of lacking on. And we're honestly a very successful department, extremely aggressive in getting water on the fire, and that ultimately is what matters. And one of the biggest things that I know that I hurtled into or had to deal with, and was a hurdle, was obviously why. Why would you want to do anything different? And like I said before, for me, it's not about me. Nothing ever I ever do is for myself. It's very rare I ever do anything for myself. But what's best for the citizens is what I always fall back on. And it's hard. It's a hard conversation because it brings a different emotion out of individuals when you start questioning, our drive and our purpose as a department. And at times, even my old department, even though we were smaller, and even some of my other buddies, and even us at Tulsa, I mean, we get too far into what can the department do for me versus what can I do for the department. And I've really tried to drive that home quite a bit on a lot of the different things that I've ran into and different conversations I've had with individuals. And it's been some hard conversations, and definitely hasn't helped my side of things much at all at times, just being honest and blunt. But being extremely aggressive and getting water on the fire really fast has its benefits. Sometimes it has its negatives. And could we have taken those pictures off the wall and taken them outside before we blasted the water all over them or yanked the ceiling down on top of them? And so those are the little things that I've tried to modify. The ventilation, I caught a lot of flack for ventilation because vertical ventilation is not something we do at Tulsa Fire Department. And so I will say that it's definitely an option we have now. And so it's not all across the entire city. There's a lot of district chiefs that are completely no about it. Even our deputy chief is not a very big supporter of the beauty is that our policies do support it. So a lot of our policies are kind of gray and allow, and it even says that the decisions on scene are in our emergency operating procedure, EOG. It says it's left to the zeal of the command or the company officer. And so basically we have a lot of reins on our own selves to do the job that's expected of us. And so obviously if we get questioned, we got to back it up. And so there's been a lot of different times over the course of my career. Personally, I'm not an attic guy. I'm 6'6", 260 pounds. And so, but I've lifted a lot of individuals into an attic. And that's one thing we've always done. Put water on the fire and boom, we're checking for extension. You guys are jumping up in the attic. I catch a lot of flack from my buddies from Wichita. They're like, why don't you just drop that ceiling and spray it down? And it's just different cultures, different ways. And so, but one of the things I was trying to push for is, vertical vent on attic fires. And we burn a lot of ears at our department. And mainly because dudes jump up there, start wringing it out and steam burn themselves. And so, and that was kind of like a little bit of a, I mean, that's kind of what started all of it, I guess, and then that led into a lot of other things, different conversations and different deals. Well, okay, it's one thing to want to do this to, jump up on this roof. Well, it's easy for me when I put up Christmas lights for the last 17 years. I've walked on roofs for a long time and I have no problem with it. Well, this guy or that person or that girl and them, they've never been on a roof at all outside of the academy, or let alone throwing a ladder. We don't really ever throw ladders. We don't do a lot of that stuff. And so there were a lot of little things as a new, lieutenant. Honestly, my captain was off for extended medical leave with his wife going through some medical conditions. And so that put me in the hot seat for over a year. And so I was in a position where I could kind of motivate and push for some different things I felt were best for the department and citizens. It wasn't nothing for myself. Like, I mean, I don't expect to get any benefit out of anything I push for in my career. Now I probably have about 15 years left, and hopefully there'll be a lot more things going that way. There's been a lot of different things, but overall, that was a driving for it was what can we do to offer something better? We do really great at putting it out, but how can we make it better? And, 1% better or something, a guy told me one time, and that's been another thing. Every day I come in and try to do something where I can make myself better, something better for the department, something with the truck or the station. We've got 24 hours to make it the way we want. And so, but yeah, that's, it's been a challenge for sure. We run Quints. And so, like I said, we're very aggressive on the hose line. And so a lot of our ladders, it's an opportunity to steal fire from an engine. And so changing that mentality in the culture I was in that small circle, and to this day, those guys are still operating that way. Clearly, if they pull the ladder pulls on scene and the engine's nowhere to be seen, they know they're not there, they're delayed, whatever it is, they're going to pull a hose line. That's what's best for that situation. If they see any other circumstances that lead to they need to do a search, then they'll do a search. But that was possibly not pulling a hose line and having the mentality when they roll out and go to that house fire and being searched first was never a thing. And so that's pretty cool to see that there's already a lot of crews doing that. And that was my whole thing, is that I didn't enjoy showing up on scene saying, hey, we're on scene, and waiting to be told what to do. And so I felt like that put us behind the eight ball quite a bit. And if we roll out of the station every single time, we know that we're going to search, and we know we're going to have some utilities, or we're going to have RID or some of those predetermined assignments, that helps us be successful. We can start playing through our head. It's kind of like going to a medical. You have chest pain, you're running through those protocols in your head on your way there, and that helps you be successful. I hate to relate to medical stuff, but it's the truth. I mean, there's a lot of things that whole world is successful because a lot of smart people put that in place. And showing up and knowing that we're going to search, I know what tools I'm going to grab, my size up abilities, reading that smoke and the construction is going to allow me to be successful as well, and knowing where to start looking. But if we pull up and we're going to pull hose lines, that's a different game too. We need to know how to estimate the stretch, pull the right hose line, work the mechanics of the hose line throughout the house. All that comes back, like I said before, the training side of things, but kind of got on some rabbit trails and honestly forgot what the original question was.
No,
I'm so bad at this.
you answered it just fine.
It's so
you answered
funny.
It just fine. You're good. So kind of off topic ish. At what point did the smoke diver program start intriguing you?
So that's a very neat, there's a lot of people that don't know, and there's only a handful of them. So my first opportunity to go to FDIC in 2014 with my old department, I took two hot classes, hands-on classes. One of them was Truck Company Essentials with Mike Champo and I think Sam Hiddle and maybe Chad Martin was there and someone else. And so that was an awesome program or class. And established a pretty good relationship with Sam Hiddle and been working with him ever since, or, training. And then the other class I took was a advanced search and rescue firefighter survival type class with TIC or something. And I can't remember how it was worded, and it happened to be a Georgia smoke diver class. And so I took that class, had a lot of fun. The three of us that went up there all took that class and were like, oh, we're going to go sign up for this class. We're going to go do that. Started doing research, and I was like, there is no way in hell I'm ever going to be successful at this class. I was 280 pounds. My confidence was very low, just overall. And so kind of put that on the back burner, totally forgot all about it after looking it up, what it required and took. And, flash forward, I get hired at Tulsa, after that class, kind of realizing that I was not in the shape that I felt like I probably should be to go to this class I thought was kind of a cool idea. That was a reality check, and I started working towards losing some weight, hoping I would get hired in the academy, started running a bunch, and so I ended up getting hired at Tulsa, graduate 2016, get my assignment at Station 20. My first driver was a guy named Dylan Broadland, he was the one that pulled me aside, that had a little talk with me, told me, hey, you might might not speak up sometimes, keep it to yourself, let us be unsuccessful. And then we'll realize at some point that we're all assets to each other and stuff anyway. But he came in one day and was just complaining about how this crazy workout he just did and how he's breathing through his ears and he just can't believe that he just did this workout or needed some potassium and all this stuff. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I like working out. Like, tell me what's up. And so he was preparing to go to Georgia for a smoke diver class because a few of them had been training to go down there and try to get more members, basically to start an Oklahoma program. And so they took nine down there the first time. I believe it was nine, and only one of them passed. And the only one that passed was Chief Brian Lloyd. And so he's a different animal. Everyone, he's a freak of nature of mental toughness. And so, but he was the one that originally was pushing to try to start this Oklahoma program. He had gone through the Mississippi Smoke Diver and was like, hey, we need something like that. And I think he was trying to fire up, a little bit of passion in his career and trying to find a new way to drive individuals to buy into the fire service a little more and improve different things in whatever direction that he was trying to push for. And so, he went down and he was successful. And that was what was recommended from, Chief David Rhodes and all the big wigs down there in Georgia, like, hey, you can go and start your own little program, or, what you should do is pass our class and we'll help you with Oklahoma. We'll basically give you the nice little path there. Here's all the documents, like everything to be successful. We'll come up for your first class and help. And I think they brought like 50 individual 50 instructors to help on our first class. And
Man.
so flash forward from 2014 when I had taken the class and thought there's no way. 2018 I passed Georgia Smoke Diver class 56. And so 1039 was my number. That's kind of a big deal in that world. But so that was 2018. I think 2000, I probably should know the year, but I think it's 2000. It was 2020 was our first class. It was right around COVID. It was right before COVID like hit everything. It was kind of in the news talking about it here and there. But we had Oklahoma Smoke Diver number one. And so since then we've had five classes and I'm not a big wig involved in that. Just help kind of, I love to be a behind the scenes guy. If you need something built or worked on, that's what I enjoy doing. And so most people know me from the vertical chop station. That's my station in Oklahoma. I make it look pretty easy as an example, just for the fun of it. And then they obviously I'm taller and I think the leverage is why, but, but outside of that, I mean, that's been kind of the progression. And then, to say all that, another thing that I podcast bios talking about myself is something I don't do very well. But one thing I'm extremely proud of, outside of my family, they're obviously everything and I wouldn't be where I am. But obviously completing the program was an achievement. Helping Oklahoma has been a huge achievement as well. But I've had the opportunity as of 2024 to go to FDIC and help teach with that first class that I took in 2014. And so, according to one of the big dogs that's involved, like as far as I know, they've never had anyone do that. And so I thought that was pretty cool to have a 10-year swing where I went through it as a student and FDIC went through the class and come and now had the opportunity. And the first year I just threw pallets, whatever. It was a good learning experience to be around everything. You're just fire loading. And then this year was teaching fire attack with a couple of guys. And so, which, like I said, everything happens for a reason. Being back on an engine hasn't ever been a goal. I was really trying to push and drive the truck culture and the search culture. But the reality is all of us have to be successful in that for the department to be successful and what's best for the citizens. And so our engines need to be squared away on searching, as well as if they get, even like our policy says that, we're all like a big Swiss Army knife because that ladder might be assigned to search. Well, now, since we send one ladder to every call, they might call for someone to do ventilation. And so, or utilities or throw ground ladders, so it's a good another opportunity there because being on an engine, be able to help kind of boost some of that influence there. And then, like I said, going to FDIC to help with that class, I'm teaching hose mechanics, which I haven't messed with since the academy. I helped with a couple of years before, or the year before, but haven't worked on an engine in almost 5 or 6 years. And so it was all, like I said, it all happens for a reason. It's been a blessing. But overall, 10-year swing and being able to go back and help with the class is pretty cool. So it's good. It's been an awesome experience.
And I'm assuming first time at Georgia, first time passed.
Yeah.
Okay. Would you say?
I trained for about 20 weeks. And, the first time we sent 9, one passed. We had a pretty big driving force of trying to start Oklahoma. So there was a lot of support. I know there's a lot of individuals that grind it out themselves and there's a ton of social media things now, I think, that really help understand like what's expected of you. Because even this last Oklahoma class, every individual that showed up looked like they were extremely squared away. And so, as much as we all want everyone to be successful, the limitations of the class and how long it takes is just not possible. I think within the exception of, I think we finished with, no, I can't even think how many, 18 or so. There was only like 4 or 5 that were dropped on performance, and that's going to be something like not being able to lift the hose, hoist and stuff like that. I would say a high 80% or more are quitting on their own or just not showing back up. And so, when I went to Georgia, passed the first time, but I had a lot of support, we took 7 down there with us and only 4 of us passed. And so it's still pretty humbling to be successful. Working out with those 7 guys every shift, every day. My wife hated it. Honestly, she thought I was nuts. I don't know how else to really explain that, but getting up at 4:30 every morning, driving to the training center to do a workout on my day off, driving to the training center to do a workout before shift, driving the training center after my shift and putting in, an hour to 3 hours every day, 6 days a week for 20 weeks. That's what I felt like I had to do to be successful, because I basically wanted to show up and not have anything to worry about physically. Like I said, I'm 6'6", 260 pounds. With all the gear and all that stuff on it, it's heavy stuff. Don't get me wrong, but I know someone that's shorter and smaller stature is going to have, I would think things would be harder, having to hold the same air pack and the same gear. But I wanted to make sure that physically that was not a problem, because I knew mentally I wasn't going to quit. There was no way. And so, like I said, I kind of have the ability to flip a switch and go to a happy place, I guess. I don't know. A lot of the guys when I helped at the academy used to give me a lot of crap because I would help do the workouts and they're like, you got to stop. Like, they're throwing up. I was like, well, we're getting ready to go on a run. We're not even done yet. And they're like, they're not you, Gary. I'm like, well, we're all preparing for the same thing. We just got to keep going,
Right.
But it's, I don't know. I know you have some ambition. Making yourself the most uncomfortable for as long as you can, and continually being able to do that, that's what'll prepare you for it. I had a guy one time was asking me about the workouts I was doing and stuff, and he's a big CrossFitter and he does a lot of programming and all that stuff. And I was explaining the workouts, and he was like, all that workout sounds like is suck. There's no benefit. Like, you won't see any return. You won't get bigger arms or higher this. Like, it's just straight up designed to suck. And that's what Chief Lloyd was all about, And so, like, sometimes we'd show up, and Saturdays were like a group workout day. Like, you can show up Saturdays, they would put you through some mocks, smoke sessions or do an obstacle course or something like that. And sometimes we'd show up and you'd be like, you're doing 20 hose hoists. You can't leave until you do 20 hose hoists, which, we were hose hoisting 75 pounds is what we were using to train for in class. It's like 55 pounds. And so that was ridiculous. Sometimes you show up and you're, hey, you're going to flip the tire. The entire 3 laps is a mile. So 1 lap is, a third of a mile. So mm-hmm. it's, or hey, you're gonna pick these things up and carry them to the top of the 5-6 story tower. You know, farmers carry up and down, and then it just stuff that meant there was zero purpose to it other than it just sucking. Just right. Don't quit. And right. So, you know, I remember one time feeling like I was going to be very unsuccessful. We had gone through a pretty hard smoke session, which is the arm circles, up, down, jumping jacks. And then we went down and they're like, we're going to do 20 towers. And so I got to about the 14th tower and we're wearing elevation mask, all the gear and all that stuff. And I was I stopped and I was like, there's no way, like I'm done. Like I can't, these guys are still going. I can't keep up. And so I actually took my mask off, grabbed all my crap and just left. Didn't tell nobody nothing. And at the time, you know, Chad Miller, he's one of our big dogs with the Oklahoma program. He was there that day trying to help us, you know, do a workout. And he called me. He's like, where'd you go? I'm like, man, I had to leave. I said, I can't. Clearly, I'm not going to be successful with this. And I don't know what part of the training it was, but it was kind of a breaking point for me. And he was like, man, I hate that you left. You should have just told me. He said, because everybody else was stopped on different floors doing the same thing you were doing. And I stopped everybody at 15. And so nobody completed the workout today. He's mm-hmm. like, so come back tomorrow, do what you're supposed to do. Don't worry about it. You know, and that was, you know, where I was failing in my mind, but everybody else was as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, and that's kind of the whole point of it is, you know, not worrying about not being as good as somebody else, but just trying to push and grab that next gear, trying to drive, complete that next task. And that's something I share with anyone that when they're preparing or training for it, don't worry about Friday or Saturday or any of these days. If they tell you to do 20 push-ups, worry about doing 1 push-up, 2 push-up, 3 mm-hmm. push-up, and then be done, you know. And mm-hmm. then, you know, if they tell you to throw a ladder and go up here and that's all you're going to worry about. Don't worry about what we're eating for lunch today. Don't worry about what time we're getting out of here or that it's raining the entire time or snowing like my class, you know, but yeah, it's one task at a time. So complete that task and move on to the next one.
Love it. Okay. All right. And would you say physical fitness plays a major role when it comes to firefighting?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's no question about it. It's a very physically demanding job. And I think there's a lot of different avenues that people go down to be successful. And I don't think there's any one way or any one program or any one type of, I guess, way to prepare. Like I said, I don't think there's any one way. Everyone's different. And, you know, if you decide you only do gear workouts and that's how you're going to be successful, that's great. You know, where I do cardio, just yesterday we ran the tower a whole bunch. I wore my gear, my little sweatsuit, you know, and then got done. Did free weight workout, you know, those are the things that I feel like I need. I need to maintain the muscle, you know, building the muscles, but also losing the muscles, doing all the hard cardio. And so it's a weird balance, but, you know, physical fitness is a huge thing. I mean, I think even if you look at the statistics, you know, about 100 firefighters die a year in line of duty death. And really, you know, I don't remember the exact number, but I would say less than 9%. Is it 9% that are actually related to some kind of fire related situation? The rest of them are all cardiac type stuff. We're basically probably being out of shape or have some kind of underlying issue going on or something like that, you know? And yeah, so absolutely. I mean, you know, fitness is something that like it goes back to the sports thing, you know, the football, you know, I mean, they're working out every day, they're doing the different things so they can be successful for that one game. At the end of the week, we don't know when our game's going to be. And so it's a balance, you know. I've definitely beat myself up pretty hard on shift a few times and then had a pretty big boomer, but or a 4-hour call with a lot of overhaul and, you know, it. But I think some of the mental toughness I got from the smoke diver program has allowed me to be successful on some of those. And so just knowing you can push yourself a little further and harder. You know, even if you work out hard on shift, I'm a big advocate of putting in the hours and time on shift as well as your days off. you know, different things. People do different stuff. If the CrossFit's your thing, if functional firefighting workouts your thing, or if just straight up free weights, I mean, cardio is a huge one. And so a lot of times I'll just put the treadmill at 15 and walk at a level 3 and get the heart rate up to about 150. And, you know, I burn more calories doing that than if I were to run 6 miles. So, you know, when I was working downtown, you know, stairs were a huge deal. So I was running the tower every shift, every day before shift, and a lot of times after shift, sometimes on shift, you know, just because you never know when you might have that one where you've got to truck it up the stairs. And really, we should all be doing that in my department anyway, because we're all a third alarm away from being called to a high-rise fire anyway. And so I'm definitely guilty of slacking in that world. But, you know, like, it's just, there's always something like that just makes me think that, like, you know, probably need to do more towers, you know. And so it's a balance. It's hard because we're abusing ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
39 years old and still going. But, yeah. So, yeah, fitness is a huge thing. It's definitely what's going to allow us to be successful in our career or not. So.
Okay. In your opinion, what do you think the fire departments can improve on when it comes to recruitment and retention?
Never really thought about a lot of that stuff until, you know, a lot of the recent things. I know it's been a thing, and, you know, we usually have about 150 to 180 members applying. And, you know, I think that's the pool they usually have to pull from for our department. But I think the biggest thing is being transparent of what's truly expected. You know, overall, you know, we have a lot of guys that will make their own little flyers at the station and use their own little Photoshopping abilities. And sometimes, you know, we say, well, why isn't our recruitment officer doing this? Or why aren't they doing that? Or why'd they hire this person? Why did they hire that person? And really, like, I mean, we all have the ability to sign up for committees and be involved for things. And so, you know, the atmosphere at the station, the morale, the overall support from leadership, admin, and all that is what's going to retain the members. You know, if you're constantly being negative at the station, always talking about how horrible things are or complaining about this, why would that firefighter not stay? Why would they stay there? You know, why would they possibly seek out to make $5,000 more to go run a box over here at this department? You know, it's tough. It definitely something I don't have all the answers for that. You know, the recruitment part of it. I am a huge advocate. If they're not knocking on the door to get hired, we probably don't want them. You know, I've got a really good buddy of mine up in Wichita. He pretty much runs how people are hired, and I love every aspect of it. And, you know, I do think that sometimes, you know, departments are checking boxes and they're trying to meet quotas and, you know, and not even like to get into the weeds of the DEI and stuff like that. But like they're so worried that, hey, we've been approved to hire 27 members. Like, we've got to hire 27. We've got to graduate 27. Well, that really strong arms the department as a whole, because, you know, in the words of my buddy Runyon, you just hired a 25-year problem, you know, just by just having a check box and bring someone in. Now, you could have someone that gets hired that still be a problem for 25 years. And,
right.
And a lot of people, what they say now is like, oh, they're not even going to last 25 years anyway. They're going to be gone. Yeah, but that's not helping our pension out by hiring this guy or female that whatever person that can't do the job for 25 years and isn't a successful benefit. I don't know wording, but you know, when they're not really giving the most to the citizens of the city, they're a detriment overall. So yeah, they're filling a role. They're just playing firefighter. But even if they only make it 5 years, a lot of times they're getting medical pensions out of that, which is guaranteed. It's basically like a 20-year pension you have to pay. You're getting for 50%. Like, that's crushing our systems. You know what I mean? And so, it's tough. I don't know the recruitment side of things. I mean, there are a ton of people that want the job, and I don't know if it's the appeal they see. I mean, social media, I think, is everything. It's a driving force behind pretty much the way of life anymore, unfortunately. But fortunately, it's an opportunity for us to capture anything and everything and show them what we're all about. And I think if, you know, departments are selling themselves and putting all their dirty laundry out there can be bad, but it can also be good. You know, if you're showing the big fires and the big calls and all that, you know, the citizens sometimes don't want to see it. They don't want to know, but it's the reality. You know what I mean? You know, we had, I know like even our police departments had a lot of trouble hiring. And, you know, I think a lot of that was contributed to some of their leadership stuff where, you know, they had like 100 people that just left the force, you know, out of nowhere, just go on to do different things. And, you know, it's a very active city for the police department. We kept the first 48 in business for I don't know how many years. And so, you know, live PD, live fire, they've all been there. It's a very unique little dynamic of calls that we get. And so the stuff are there. And most people that want that are seeking that type of thing. And so, like adrenaline type stuff, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the ambulance service. Thankfully, we don't have the ambulance service. So that's something we should sell. You know, hey, we have paramedics, but you're not going to be in a box for the first 3 years or until you promote, like some of our suburbs. And so, that's, I feel like, is huge and just builds that culture, you know. And I think a lot of things overall that's gotten us in the negative aspect of recruitment and retention is not worrying about culture in the department and focusing more on administrative things or more of, you know, how do we meet the quotas or how do we check the boxes for the mayor or, you know, whatever it is, and not focusing on our people. And because your biggest recruiters are your 730 members on the department.
That's
I mean,
right.
they're the ones that are going to be selling, and they're the ones that really should be bringing, there should be a line of people, you know. And so how do you, why are you applying here? Who do you know? You know, okay. And that could be bad and good, you know, because a lot of people got opinions. And but ultimately, man, if someone's just showing up and they don't know anything, then hey, how about you come back next time and do some research? You know, like that, we should tell them that, you know. I don't remember the examples that my buddy Runyon uses, but they basically throw out there, you know, if you have this kind of rescue, what are you going to do? What kind of tools are you going to grab? And if people don't know the answer, he's like, better luck next time. Why don't you do some research before you show up for the fire department? You know, in a way, it's kind of a, they got some brass balls over there doing it, you know, because, but they have the support of their administration, their city council, their HR, all that stuff, and they sold it. And so, but, you know, overall, I think, like I said, the members are, should be your biggest recruiters, and, you know, your retention is going to come down to the morale of the department and the culture.
Definitely. Love it. Okay. All right. I always like to ask the guests, and I know you kind of hit on it earlier, but I'm still going to ask it anyways. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up?
I don't even know because I will say as much as I've pushed and everything has been fire. Like I don't really have a lot of hobbies. My hobbies are tinkering, working on things, fixing other people's problems, working overtime, training, going here, doing this, that, or whatever. You know, I have realized that, like, you know, that there is more to life than just the fire service. I'm definitely guilty of being off in the weeds too much. There's a balance. And I don't miss, if I'm off shift, like I go to everything for my kids, everything's about my family. I catch some flack from some different friends, but that's my world outside of the fire service is my family. And so, you know, the path to retirement and all that stuff, like I said, I have about 15 years in the system, 10 years at Tulsa. You know, I would imagine, you know, 55, 65 is when they'll make me retire. I don't know where I'll go in the distance of the career. I think, you know, the morale and atmosphere on the department is going to be the biggest dictator, and the different hurdles that anyone experiences. I've always had a goal of going 35 years. I don't know why, but that's been a goal. My grandpa did 38, so maybe that'll be a goal, you know. You know, as for promoting any more beyond this, I have no ambition. But at the same time, I've also listened to a lot of bigger and some more smarter people than me. And sometimes it doesn't have to be your ambition. It's just what's best for the department. And so if I get that signal, if I get that feeling down the road, you know, then maybe I'll cross that path. Maybe it's something that, you know, I have to get off the truck because of a back issue or something. But, you know, I would hate to promote or do anything like that. I would rather go to a, you know, maybe a code position or something like that, you know, to help the department still. But I know a lot of people think that I would want to be in the training division. And I will say my little stint I did recently with helping the academy, I don't really have any ambition to go out to the training center. There's just too much politics. And so hopefully at some point, if some of that's cleaned up, then I would love to give back and help, you know, honestly, because the training center is, they are making the difference on 20 to 60 individuals every time we hire someone.
Right.
And whatever they get and whatever they learn and will be basically the face of the department in 10 to 15 years. And so that's huge. But yeah, that's, I don't really know. I mean, I'm going to be on Tulsa Fire Department. I know that. I have no ambition to go anywhere else or, you know, I want to make Tulsa the best they can be and help where I can. So.
Okay. But what I love about it, what I love about what you stated just now and earlier too, was if you go to the training center, it's the training center division's job to get those individuals that are in that academy squared away. But upon completion, it's then up to the company officer to keep that drive and to get those skill sets even better. And you always hear, well, they came out of the academy, they don't know shit. And it's like, okay, somewhere down the line, someone might fall through the cracks. But if you're a company officer, it's your job where now you have clear one-on-one time and you can get that individual where they need to. So it's very easy to point the blame and point fingers. But then again, too, you have individuals that that's all they want to do. They don't want to take ownership of it, even if they're the company officer.
Yeah, I think, you know, personally, I've never really worried about what someone's knowledge level was coming out of an academy or anything like that, because I know that what they learn there is very minimal. And so the level that we've, I feel like, culturally held our standard for what they're learning there is basically just to check some boxes, cross some T's and dot some I's and get some certificates. And, you know, mainly OSHA requires, you know, Firefighter One, stuff like that, you know. And so we put all of them through Firefighter One, Fire Two, Ops, all the normal stuff. We call it a master certification. And that's the first 14 weeks or so of the academy, and then the rest of it up to about 20 to 23 weeks, depending on the academy, will be basically what we call learning the Tulsa Fire Department way. Unfortunately, staffing numbers, other stuff going on around the city, company drills, natural disasters that seem to happen almost every few months for us in Oklahoma. You know, members are being pulled and tugged from here and there. And so a lot of times those academies won't get a lot of, they'll get the reps and stuff, but they're not getting those interactions. And so like one of the things that like me and myself and a few of us, when we were out there, you know, hey, whoever's on shift today. So each of the groups are split up in shifts. And so whatever shift with A, B, and C is what we do here in Tulsa. And so if it was A shift, hey, okay, A shift people, we have three trucks there assigned to the academy. Put your stuff next to the truck. And so when we do the practice drops or if we have anything, we'll honk the horn and you get bunked out and get on the truck. We'll drive a couple laps and then we'll pull up and do a little 15, 20 minute, you know, evolution real quick, you know. And so doing those reps, I think, are huge. And sometimes we're restricted with, like I said, the politics of different things and not having enough members. And, you know, it's a tug of war between the city and administration and everyone else, because we always want more, we need more. And then they're like, no, you don't, you know, budgets and all that. And, but, you know, them having the reps there is going to allow them to hopefully be successful when they get out there. You know, there's some different models and stuff out, you know, that different departments do that I've heard about that sound intriguing, and obviously it works best for them. But, you know, I wish that our people could come out and not be the manpower that's filling that truck, but be, you know, above, maybe do overtime for a couple more weeks, maybe another month, and let these members be addition to, so they can get more actual reps and have someone, you know, more shadowed. You know, does that make sense? Like, the easy example is, so for instance, I reference Wichita. A lot of people will give me a lot of crap. They're like, oh, why don't you just go work there? But like, no, I want to work for Tulsa Fire Department. And so, but I mean, we do a lot of awesome things. I feel like they don't do well, and they do some things. But so when their recruits get out, they go work. They put all the recruits in this one district. It's the district that gets the most fires, the most action. And they all go up there and they spend a week or two there getting experience. And they move over to this district. And they all – so they're not just – we're in our world, like you get your assignment, like that's it.
That's it,
unless
yeah.
Unless you move on, unless you decide you want to go somewhere or you promote. And so sometimes you'll get put in a slower, non-busy area, and that's the only world you know, because that's unfortunately maybe how you did in the academy dictated where you're going. And that's just, you know – I feel like we're really setting ourselves up for failure overall. We're successful as a department, but those individuals aren't getting the most out of what they could if they just spent a week or 2 weeks rotating through these busier places that get more fires, that get better calls or more medicals, you know. And you know, as much as I would love to say we can give them all that in our fancy training center, we just can't because of our manpower restrictions. And, you know, they get a whole week or two of surge. They get a whole week of burn week, you know, and stuff like that. And so they get a lot of different things that, yes, the guys 25 years ago, they didn't get any fires. That's what I've heard. It was like, well, when I went through, we didn't get any of this. Not even close. I'm like, okay, well, why can't we be better? Why, like, you know.
Right.
I definitely caught some flack when I was out there. They're like, I remember my first academy, Gary. I'm like, this is their first academy. Mm-hmm. This is the only academy they're going to get in their career unless they decide to go somewhere else. And it's our – it's our responsibility to give them everything we have so they can be successful when they get out there. And so if I'm going to sweat a little more and be sore tonight and struggle tomorrow, then that's what's worth it to me. And so it all falls back on the servant leadership. That's a huge driving force for me. And like I said, I don't like tooting the horn. That's just everything I do is for some other people. And more, I mean, as much as those cadets probably hated me because every day we worked out, I was down there. You know, I didn't find a hole to go hide in or anything like that or miss it. You know, I made sure I was down there to make sure that I was doing everything they were doing. Mm-hmm. And so I can't expect anyone to listen to anything I've got to say if I'm not willing to put the work in with them. So
that's a fact. That's a fact. Okay. Gary, I really appreciate you accepting the invite. I know this was very foreign to you. I like the way you are because in a sense it reminds myself of what I've been told. You need to smile more or you need to talk more, you need to engage. And it's like everybody's different, but like if I can have conversations with people, but it's just the fact that the way you present yourself, like I see that in myself because I've been told that before. I continually get told this and it's like, okay, this is who I am. It is what it is, but continue being you. And I really appreciate you coming on and doing this. I know it's a little bit out of your comfort zone, but to me, you smashed it out the park, man, with these little nuggets and these gems that you're dropping, because it may, even if people don't want to hear it, sometimes people need to hear things that they don't want to. And sometimes you need people that are going to be blunt and not sugarcoat shit, because we can't make it all about that person. The overall mission is we all have to be in this together. And I thank you for that.
Yeah. Anytime. I appreciate it. Yeah. It's been an experience and I'm fortunate. I appreciate you inviting me.
So. Yes, sir. I really appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.